For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days, with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here is your host, Dr. Neil Nathan.
Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, from Gordon Medical Associates. I would like to take this time to thank our sponsors, Research Nutritionals, BioResource, and Frequency Specific Microcurrent for making this program possible. Since I personally use these products in my practice on a daily basis, as our program unfolds, I'll be mentioning some of those products when appropriate. So again, we are live, so if you have any questions for us, you can call 866-472-5792, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. I'd like to remind you that you can download the Voice America mobile app, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Time, and Kindle, all for free. If you're into social media, please like us and share us. We do now have our own Facebook page, so please go to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today and like us and share us. And you can ask me questions on that site as well. If you would like to consult with me, please see my website at www.neilnathanmd.com, and that can be arranged as well. I would like to mention for all of you out there that the Gordon Medical Associate Group is putting on a unique and really wonderful program on September 26th in Santa Rosa. So for those of you who are our patients or have other physicians that are in the area and might like to attend, we're going to talk about the sensitive patient, the patients who are the most exquisitely sensitive to everything, and how we have developed our unique approach to help these folks with those problems and to move their health care forward. So that'll be September 26th, and please go to the Gordon Medical Associates website for more information. And with that, I am delighted to introduce my friend and guest for today's program, Dr. Lisa Harvey. I'm also pleased and proud that Lisa tolerates me in her office. I have office hours in her office one day a week in Fort Bragg, and I'm very appreciative to Lisa for providing me that space. She is a developmental optometrist. We're going to spend part of our program today talking about what that is. She received her undergraduate degree from McGill University in Montreal, Canada, and her Doctor of Optometry from UC Berkeley in 1983. She completed an internship in pediatric optometry and binocular vision at the State University of New York College of Optometry and worked for a year as a research optometrist at Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco with a focus on cataracts and the visual side effects of systemic medications. She moved to Fort Bragg, California in 1984 and started a general optometry practice. 20 years later, she started a specialty practice in vision therapy, pediatric optometry, and vision rehabilitation. She's co-edited the textbook, Vision Rehabilitation, Multidisciplinary Care of the Patient Following Brain Injury, with Dr. Penelope Sutter. She's board certified in vision development and vision therapy, and I'm very happy that she can join us today. So, Lisa, welcome.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. I've been working at persuading you to join us for quite some time, and I'm happy that this has come to pass. So, Lisa, why don't we start with really basic stuff, which is for some of our listeners, they will not be clear about the difference between going to see an optometrist and an ophthalmologist. So please help our listeners to understand that.
Okay, I will do my best. So an optometrist does 4 years of undergraduate and then 4 years of optometry school specializing in eyes and vision. And they're able to examine and diagnose and treat some eye diseases, but they're more likely to also, and so they can do lens prescriptions, they can do therapy, and they can do medication. They don't do surgery.
Right, so the big difference is that an ophthalmologist is typically an MD or a DO, and they can do surgery.
Yes.
And otherwise, they also
will be a little handier on the medications, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for a lot of the of eye needs, optometrists would be someone who could make the examination, prescribe glasses, and really diagnose a wide variety of eye conditions.
Right. And so if there's a disease, if it was important to refer you out, that would be done. Or it could be managed in the office.
Okay. So I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
So within the broad range of medical care that you can offer patients as an optometrist, what I'm particularly interested in is what you've chosen to specialize in, because I think that would be of particular interest to our listening audience here, and that would be developmental optometry. So let's start by talking about what that is.
Okay. So do you want me what it is or how you learn it?
Both.
Okay. So in terms of learning it, after you graduate from optometry school, you have to have some more continuing education to really grasp the full field of developmental vision. There are some schools now that are more geared toward offering developmental vision and vision therapy information within their program. And there are also a lot more residency programs available now for people to do an intensive year learning more. I had to start back 30 years ago. So I got my information from continuing ed and going to conferences of the various organizations that I belong to. And my knowledge slowly grew as I worked with patients and realized the problems they were having and what I needed to learn to solve their problems. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, my understanding is that this really, as a field, has slowly grown, and I think you're even saying that on a political level, the optometry folks who control the educational process are realizing that this is something that needs to be taught in more detail, and more people are getting interested in it. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, I would say that's fair. I would say we need more, but I would say it is. I mean, there was a school in Southern California that got opened, I think, about 5 years ago, and the fact that it was designed around having vision therapy be the primary focus, in addition to all the other things that people need to know, was quite a positive step forward.
So let's jump into what this is now. What constitutes the sphere of vision therapy?
So there are some problems that can't really be solved with glasses or contact lenses or surgery or medication. So that's where vision therapy comes in. And it's like physical therapy for the eyes and the brain to get the eyes and brain to talk to each other better. And it's depending on the problem that the person has, it's an individualized program where after you have the diagnosis, you figure out what the patient needs, and you do in-office therapy with them. In addition, there are other things that we do, such as, like, it might not just be vision therapy in-office. There may be special lenses that we would use, or special prisms, or special filters or occluders that they would use to make them more comfortable or more efficient in what they do.
Well, why don't we get more specific? Maybe if you can give a few examples of specific kinds of interesting problems that you've looked at and how you approach that, I think we'll get a better feel for what you're describing.
What I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Let's see. my mind goes blank. Hang on. There was, okay, I had, say there was this mother that called me from a town near, far away actually, and her son had been, he was in special ed, and he got a new teacher who listened to him read, and he was putting words from the line below into the sentence he was reading. And the teacher wisely said, you know, I don't think you're a special ed kid. I think you have a visual problem. So the kid was referred to, the child was referred to me, and I worked with him, and he became an excellent reader. And the mother had been looking for 6 years for the answer to why this was creating a problem. And
Right. So specifically with this kid,
yeah.
What kinds of things did you do to kind of lock up the diagnosis of what they were doing, and how exactly did you help them to begin to change what he was seeing and how he could see it?
Like, how did I diagnose and how did I treat it?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have ways of measuring the subtle misalignment of the eyes, which is really important. And if everybody has, like, the six muscles that surround each eye, if they're totally at rest, for some people the eyes might be out a little bit or in a little bit or one eye high or one eye low. And so that can be measured and seen how it is for them. And in addition, there are the ability to keep things clear at close point. You know, how well can you see it close? The muscle that's inside the eye that does the near-far focusing, how comfortable is that? How relaxed is that when you're reading? Does it have to tighten up a whole bunch? The near acuity, because, you know, people talk about my child sees 20/20, which is really far away. We look at how well they can focus from near to far, and how easily at close can they sustain that focus. And I talked about the eye teeming, the two eyes holding together comfortably. And another big one, though, is eye movement control. As you move across a page of print, that requires not just a smooth pursuit, but actually sort of, it's called saccades, but sort of a jumpy, it's a, like jumping from one group of letters to the next group of letters, next group of letters. And that can be measured as simply, I mean, that could be observed, seen as simply just like observing someone's eyes, or some simple paper tests, or there's even these more elaborate, I have one here, it's a computer readalyzer where they put goggles on, they're reading the print, and there's an infrared path that gets measured by each eye, and you get to see how coordinated the eyes are in following the print, and if they're working together while they do it. So that can give
okay.
you a sense.
So you have some sophisticated ways of actually tracking, measuring, and clarifying on a more detailed basis the very complicated ways in which the brain and the eye have to work together to make this whole thing happen.
Right.
Good. So with that...
Can I tell you something interesting, too?
Yeah, of course you can.
Well, you just reminded me that one of the simple paper tests is called the King-Devic saccade test. And we've been using that for years to measure child's eye movements compared to their age group. But now that is being used as a concussion determination, that it's being used on the sidelines for high school athletes to see as a baseline how they're doing and then how fast they can, how good they are right after they've had their injury and how soon they can return to play. Sorry.
So this is going from a specialty area to mainstream, if you will.
Right.
With some of these tools being not only accepted, but being becoming a standard of what we will look at as we evaluate, not just eyes, but as our program goes along, that will include brain injury as well.
Right.
So let me take a moment, Lisa, to just talk about one of our sponsors, and that would be the bioresource company, which is located here in Northern California, not far from Santa Rosa. They have been distributing the very well-known German homeopathic remedies from several different lines. The one I want to mention today as appropriate for this particular program is the Syntrion, which is spelled S-Y-N-T-R-I-O-N, company. And they put out a group of homeopathic remedies that can do some very unique things. The one that I think is appropriate for our discussion today is a remedy called Cycirque, and that's spelled S-Y-C-I-R-Q-U-E. And they've done a number of studies showing that as an ointment or a topical, Cycirque, if placed, if rubbed very gently on the upper lid of the eye, has the ability to lower intraocular pressure and to help people who have glaucoma. So it's a very safe, very simple way of improving glaucoma treatment. And Cycirque is also very good for any other form of inflammation in the body. It can be taken orally to help improve blood flow and circulation throughout the body. So to learn more about that particular remedy or more, please call BioResource at 800-203-3775, or you can contact them at BioResource at BioResourceInc.com. And with that, we'll go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Ouch! What do you think of when you think of dental procedures? Well, when you think about it, the teeth and the rest of the body are strongly connected. What happens in one part affects the other. In the Tooth-Body Connection with host Dr. Dawn Ewing, we'll explain more about these concepts, as well as discuss the role that your teeth play in your overall health. You'll learn about amalgams and how removing them the wrong way can be toxic to your body. Tune in Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Follow us on Twitter at Voice America TRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I'm delighted to have with us as a guest, my friend, colleague, Dr. Lisa Harvey, and she is a developmental optometrist, and she is helping us to understand what exactly that means in terms of how you might have someone in your family, a loved one, child, grandchild, friend, who might benefit from some of the concepts that we're beginning to either introduce or expand on today. So, Lisa, before our break, we were talking about a particular case you had of a child who, when they tried to read, their eyes would flip lines so that it looked like they were potentially autistic or not functioning right. And it turned out it was a visual issue that you were able to diagnose and treat. So we started talking about some of the tools that you have to help focus on the detailed mechanics of how that happens. So what exactly did you do with this child to help them regain their vision?
Okay, so in the beginning when we start therapy, we usually start using each eye separately. So we will use for this particular fellow, we didn't do glasses. Let me just put that way. Sometimes we do. But we start with doing what we call monocular skills, where we put a patch on one eye and we teach each eye to do near-far focusing, to be able to do some stretches so the muscles get limber, and maybe practice, I know we did for him, eye movements. Bigger movements to start and then smaller, so that each eye has equal skills when we put them back together again. And we often find when you do that one eye will be more accurate than the other until you get those skills equalized.
Okay. So now I understand that there's always what we call a dominant eye anyway.
Yes.
So that wouldn't have to be exactly equal for people to be able to see properly?
No, it wouldn't have to be, but in a child sometimes you'll see that one eye is much less accurate than the other. Or in a someone with brain injury, you might have it be different.
Right, so then you want to bring that into alignment.
Right.
Okay.
Then we would move into a binocular stage where you were going to work on eye teaming, have the eyes really point at the same point in space, and we have many different ways to do that, both with instruments and procedures that have an image for each eye that's slightly different than the other eye, and or we use prisms to make that happen so that they have to bring the two images together through the prism.
Okay, so as you use the term physical therapy for the eye, and that sounds
right.
Like exactly what this is, that you're
right.
Literally giving them exercises to bring their muscles and hence the whole visual field into focus.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think I did it for this child, but for other children that I've done with similar problems, we also look at how their whole body is operating. Like you may have them, we have them do various walks to see if the top part of the body is coordinated with the bottom part of the body. So that sometimes we have to work on those foundational skills also.
So just to backtrack for a second.
Yeah.
We're really talking about eyes, but
yes.
As with everything
yes.
else that I know about, the body is a functional unit and it works together. So we're talking about the eyes, the brain, but also proprioception, which is how the feet feel the ground and give that information to the brain and give us balance, which connects with the cerebellum. And so this is a whole lot more complicated. So do you have any particular physical therapist that you work with to bring other body balancing things into alignment as well?
I don't have one that I work with. But a lot of optometrists do, and they also have. There's a lot of cooperation between occupational therapy and developmental optometry.
Right. This just strikes me as something that would be a multidisciplinary kind of a project to get the whole body into alignment, not just the eyes.
Right.
Okay.
And a lot of times, when some children have more need for foundational skills, which I call them, like when they really need more full body coordination. You know, the problem here is I don't have that many people to refer to, or anybody. You know, and so that's I have to take on a task that I'm not as skilled at that I'd like to be. But
okay.
I do.
But you still do it.
Yeah. to the best of my knowledge, I mean, the best I can. If there was someone here, there was someone here for a time, so I was easily able to refer to her.
No, I understand that. In my career over the years, I've worked in a wide variety of communities, and sometimes some of the things that I would love to refer to, I have to learn to do myself because there's nobody in my area that will do that. So it's forced me to learn more over the years, and probably it's a good thing in the long run. Okay, so we're still dealing with this kid, and we'll get there. With the exercises that you gave him, what I'm really curious about is how did that eventually manifest until getting his eyes to line up so that he could see the words as clearly perhaps as you or I do?
How did it manifest to me? He was able to do the things that I was asking him to do. His eyes were moving smoothly. Like I could have gone back and done that, the Readalyzer, the computer program, and seen that his eyes were tracking together beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could have seen that on the sensitive measure test that there was no subtle vertical deviation anymore, that his peripheral vision had expanded. What happened in this particular case, he got really good. And I said, well, how's reading? And he kept telling me, it's not so good. It's not so good. So I said, really? So I pulled down Harry Potter from the shelf, and I opened it up for him and had him just read the first couple lines. And he started to read it, and he said, this is interesting. I said, yeah, you might want to read it. And then later, as he, I think it was his graduation day, later he said to me, you know, Lisa, when I read that like a long time ago, it took me 15 minutes to read that page.
Wow.
Yeah, he goes, I go, now it's more interesting, isn't it? And he goes, yeah. And then the next time I saw him, he said, hey, Lisa, I'm on the third book.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one example. What other things are you able to help? Like, with what kinds of specific problems would your skills be particularly helpful?
Okay, so the more obvious ones might be strabismus, which is when someone exhibits an eye turn, one eye turns in a little bit or out, or one eye more up or more down, either in children or adults.
Yeah, some people call that like being cross-eyed.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Or wall-eyed or squinting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other would be amblyopia, which is the other term is lazy eye for that. But what it means in particular is that either because without any disease creating it, the eye has not learned how to see it, either because it was turned in or because there was a big difference in prescription for the two eyes, that I always had an unfocused picture on it. And that's fixable. And it's fixable not just in young kids. It's fixable in older adults as well.
So for these are, what we're talking about so far are things where the muscles of the eye that control eye movement and the ability of the eyes to move and track and do them, so the muscles are out of whack.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And now the other part about that is, like, is in young children, when they're learning how to read, you want to make sure that the eye movements are good, and they don't have to struggle to hold their, to see clearly at close.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do have to struggle to see clearly at close, it's like there's too much, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, there's too much conscious effort that has to go into keeping it clear and single, and there's less brain power left over for form perception and visual memory and things like that.
Okay,
so
you can make it easier for them.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. What else would be the kind of things that you could particularly help and be useful for?
The acquired brain injury, those people have a lot of difficulties after their accident, whether it's a stroke or a head injury, that doesn't necessarily get addressed because it's sort of an invisible problem if it's related to the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be diagnosed and at least partially remedied mm-hmm. and make it easier for them in their recovery as part of the multidisciplinary team that works with them.
Okay, and I think in our previous conversations you had mentioned that athletes, for example, who really require, you know, highly coordinated binocular vision, that this might be helpful for them as well?
Oh, yes. The some of the Olympic athletes have had this, have had vision therapy, and because you can really triangulate the ball better, you can, in terms of ball catching, ball sports, they're much more aware of people on the side of them and where the ball is in space. There's one optometrist in particular who does a lot of screening for the athletes as they're, I think it's the football team, a lot of the football teams and baseball teams have optometrists on the staff just to watch who's good and who's not good. Because mm-hmm. if someone's a really good athlete, but they have some poor visual skills that could be improved, then they know that's going to be a superior athlete once those visual problems are fixed.
Right. I can think of two immediate examples of that. I mean, my one of my first loves is basketball, and the people who are really good at basketball are ones with great peripheral vision, where they can see someone streaking down the court out of the corner of their eye, and they can throw a no-look pass, like without even looking there, they can pinpoint and hit that person on the move, and everyone goes, ooh and ah, well, that's a great play. And the other example that I think of is, I hear baseball players at the highest level talking about actually seeing the seam of the baseball as it comes in, you know, we're talking about something moving over 90 miles an hour. But
right.
Rotating and spinning in all kinds of ways that pitchers can do to the ball. They can talk about seeing the seam so that they can hit it properly. And I think that amazes me. I'm not even sure I could see the baseball coming in at an hour. But we're talking about elite athletes, and
right.
seeing something like that would be, if you can, that gives you an incredible advantage to move on from there.
Right. And people say the same thing about tennis, too. It's not quite as fast as the 90-mile-an-hour baseball.
Well, faster, actually. You know, they're serving now at 140 miles an hour.
Whoa.
So,
Not on my court.
Not on my court either. I played on my high school tennis team, but I never saw, I mean, back in those days, I never saw anything vaguely like that. I don't think I could even move my racket fast enough to whiff at it if it was going that fast. But, so we're talking a different level of eye and brain coordination. So Lisa, I'm going to take a second to talk about another of my sponsors right now, and that is the frequency-specific microcurrent. Often we talk about it here as FSM, and frequency-specific microcurrent is the electrical device that we use that has the ability to do some remarkable things to the body in terms of fine-tuning it. We can use it in this context for improving brain function. We can specifically improve the activity of the brain and some of the neurotransmitters by the correct use with people who are trained in its use and know what they're doing. So this may be appropriate within this discussion to think about seeking out someone with that particular skill. That may augment the ability to improve the kind of eye-brain coordination we're talking about. So to learn more, do go to frequencyspecific.com for more information. And with that, we'll go to another break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Biohacking for Health is working with your individual biology to gain access to and control over the systems within your body. It allows you to explore your biology and improve health and wellness. Each of us has unique genetic profiles and physiology that require individualized approaches. On Biohacking for Optimal Health, Dr. Daniel Stickler and his expert guests provide a roadmap to navigate the world of biohacking human potential. Tune in every Thursday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan. Again, if you have any questions, please call us at 866-472-5792. And if you've just joined us, we're talking about developmental optometry with Dr. Lisa Harvey. And we've been covering some of the things that this particular field is especially helpful for. And Lisa, perhaps you could take a few minutes to help listeners understand what kind of specific symptoms might they be looking for in their child or friend or grandchild that would alert them that there is a visual issue which you might be able to help?
Okay. Or other developmental optometrists do.
Correct.
Some of the symptoms would be, jerky eye movements, blurred vision, double vision, headaches or nausea with reading. Actually, even motion sickness in a car sometimes can be related. But one that's a big clue would be closing one eye or covering one eye when you're reading, or tilting the head to see better. I've had instances where I ask the child, how can you read as long as you'd like without your eyes bothering you? And they'll say yes. And I look at the parent, and the parent goes, they're not reading, because they just avoid reading to make it easier for them. Poor reading comprehension, reversals. A lot of times when kids have eye movement problems and or eye teaming problems, they will get letters like 12 will become 21, words like saw and was will be reversed. And the word like cloud and could would be confused just because they're not smoothly reading across the page. And since they're having to overcome that all the time, it's like reading becomes this really frustrating thing, and homework is such a challenge they don't want to do it anymore. They put up such a fight about it. The thing that one can know is, like, if your child, or you just know that they're smart, but they're just not getting school, then that's a clue. A lot of times if you say to the child, can you see, yeah, you can see this, right? Or can you see this? And they'll say, yes, I can see it, because they're not going to report that there's a problem. They're not going to report that they see things funny, because they don't know that they do. And as parents, teachers, educators, unless we're just going to see the behaviors that they have. We're not going to know that they see funny, so to speak.
Right, because they don't even know enough to tell you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
In the schools, they have speech therapy, but there's no vision therapy because you know a kid sounds funny when they talk, but you can't tell how their vision is. So they're kind of left just there. So if we have a limited vision, limited definition of vision, we're going to miss out on those kids.
Mm-hmm.
And their ability to succeed.
So as an example, let's say you do have a kid who makes the word cloud into the word could.
Right.
Again, how can you determine that they're doing it? Because they may not know that they're doing it. They just know they're frustrated.
Right. So what we do first is we're going to do the basic eye exam. Well, I shouldn't say basic, a comprehensive eye exam. We're going to take a look first and see how well can they see in the close-up as opposed to the distance. Because what will happen is parents will take their child to a doctor who says, he sees 20/20, he sees fine. But that is just referring to how they see at a distance. Can they see letters 1/3 of an inch at 20 feet away? And it doesn't say how well they can do in the close-up. And how well they can... So, first of all, you have to make sure that that's clear in the close-up. You want to make sure that they don't have something called convergence insufficiency, which is where the eyes don't track. They don't comfortably focus at the same place. There is an expected individual letter reversal frequency up until about second grade. Second grade, age 7. That's about when you should see those reversals of individual letters and numbers tail off. So you can test a child and see where they are on that scale.
Okay, and then you test them, you can begin to then give them, again, I'm guessing, some of these eye exercises to help that align.
Part of that is just like, okay, for the reversals in particular, what you need to look at is how far along are they on... in their ability to have like directionality and laterality. And by that I mean, I don't really care if a kid knows which is his left hand and which is his right hand, but I want him to know his sidedness. I want him to know within himself where his dominant hand is and his not-so-dominant hand, and then to be able to project that out into space. Because before a kid goes to school, a dog crossing the road one way is a dog, it crosses the other way, it's still a dog. But all of a sudden, they get to school, and it matters for B's and D's which side of that line the circle is on. And they have to use themselves as a reference to be able to tell B's versus D's. So that, we have to look first at like how far along are they on that scale. So there's different tests. Do they reverse just letters? Do they reverse all visual information? How comfortable are they, you know, projecting that sidedness of themselves out into space? And then can they see little differences and remember them? And are they able to recall what they've seen? So with regard to could and cloud, Neil?
Yeah.
For me, that is to me when I ask that question, because I give out a reversals questionnaire to parents if there's a question about reversals. And if that's one of the ones, and that's a clue to me usually that eye movements are going to be involved, because this is a child whose eyes aren't smoothly taking in a nice chunk of letters at one time and not having it be jumbled up for them.
Okay, and then how do you fix that?
Well, you work on well, two things, eye movement, eye teaming. Okay, so first that would be, we've gone, I told you about the monocular near-far focusing. And then in the close, you're going to work on in the close-up what I would call, say, the three major things first, which is accommodation or focusing, near-far focusing, so you keep things clear. Vergence, which is being able to keep the eyes exactly where they need to be, both in the straight-ahead plane and as you move across the page of print, and then individually have the eye move. That sometimes is all you need to do to make it be that they can do cloud and could.
Okay. So what's
otherwise? And those are eye movements. So the other thing I might have to do is, the other thing I do sometimes is I work with the child on sightedness. Like I'll have him, but I have to see at what level they're at. Do you know what I mean? Like where does the remediation have to start? Like are they have no idea what hand they write with? I had a girl recently, she had no idea what hand she wrote with. So I said, okay, we got to start there. So you'll appreciate this, you know, you give her a glove, baseball glove and a baseball. You know, have her turn screws to see which is her dominant hand. Have to throw a ball hard. Okay, that's your dominant hand. Let's start there. And so we had to start that.
Okay. So that helps with someone like that. When they don't even know which sightedness they are, we're talking about kind of like a brain glitch of some kind?
Yeah, well, more like a, you could say a brain glitch. Or maybe they didn't get enough experience in their maturation, you know, as they were crawling. Or maybe they didn't crawl. Maybe they just hopped up and walked. Maybe there was no cross-patterning. Maybe they, usually by three, children know. But, so if they don't, I mean... All I know is to train it if they don't know.
Right. So here's where I think now I'm seeing where the word developmental optometry comes in.
Right.
There we go. So now what we're seeing is how this, they may have missed or jumped through a stage of very basic development, and in doing so, they may have to kind of get back there to kind of relearn something that would then allow them
right,
to move forward.
Right, perfect, Neil.
I'm thick, but I'm getting there.
No, because I'm not expressing it, because that's like one of the tenets of developmental optometry is that vision is learned, and if you somehow missed a step, you can go back and either learn it or relearn it so you can be successful at what you want to do in life.
Perfect. So, Lisa, I got one more, one of my sponsors that I do need to talk about, and that is Researched Nutritionals. The Researched Nutritional Company for many, many years has been very well known for its specialty immune, energy, and detox formulations, which promote a healthier quality of health for our patients. They do a great deal of clinical research. So, today, in terms of what we're talking about, I thought the product I might mention would be called CogniCare, CogniCare, which we use as a comprehensive cognitive support for neurotransmitters, focus, mental acuity, and mood. It means they just help the brain to work better. So with that particular product, it's a very nice combination of nutrients that have been known to assist in those particular areas. It consists essentially of acetyl L-carnitine, phosphatidylserine, huperzine A, L-glutamine, and L-tyrosine, and vinpocetine. Now, you may or may not be familiar with those. All of them are helpful improving brain function, and the combination is a really excellent one. So, CogniCare is the one I'm mentioning, and the company is Researched Nutritionals. At 800-755-3402, or you can go to researchnutritionals.com for more information. And with that, we'll go to another break. Mm-hmm.
your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Can grief be good for you? Absolutely. It gets your attention, helping you evaluate your choices and relationships. Your losses define who you are. Tune in each week for Good Grief with host Cheryl Jones. Our show features those who have made incredible transformations by grieving their losses. You'll learn how to find your courage and strength. You'll discover the important things in your life and how to let go of things that are less important. Good Grief airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Abre mi corazón.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and with me is my friend and guest, Dr. Lisa Harvey, and we've been talking about developmental optometry, hopefully introducing to you a subject that may be of great interest and perhaps you didn't know much about. So first, Lisa, let's start with where would somebody find someone skilled in this field? What are the resources?
The websites that I think would be most helpful. The first one would be the COVD.org, and that stands for College of Optometrists in Vision Development, COVD.org. Their phone number is 1-800-268-3770. Their website has a lot of information and links to other organizations, plus how to find a doctor in your area that is skilled in this area and perhaps even board certified in vision development and vision therapy. Another organization is OEP, which is stands for Optometric Extension Program, and their website is oepf.org. Their phone number is 410-561-3791. And they, too, have links to optometrists in other areas, actually internationally. These are all international organizations. And good information on that site. For brain injury in particular, that would be the Neuro-Optometric Rehabilitation Association. Their website is nora.cc. Their phone number is area code 949-250-0176. Yes, those would be the top ones.
Excellent resources, and I think that will be great information for our listeners. So in the few minutes that we have remaining, perhaps you could just say a few more words about brain injury particularly, because that interests me. I have quite a few patients who've had a variety of traumatic brain injuries, and we're always looking for ways of assisting them and helping them.
Right. One thing that you can do is just be aware of symptoms that they may have, which might point to the fact that they have post-trauma vision syndrome, or another syndrome is called visual midline shift syndrome, and I can explain what both of those are. In the post-trauma vision syndrome, there'll be double vision, headaches, blurry vision, spatial disorientation. They just won't really know where they are in space. They sort of lose the forest and they just sort of concentrate on the trees. They can't attend to the periphery. They just have to tunnel in to details. Reading, of course, is a problem for them. The other syndrome, which would be visual midline shift syndrome, is where the person, their center of where they feel their center to be is no longer straight in front of them. It's actually shifted to one side or up or down. So you will see that their whole center of gravity has shifted over as well. And their sense of space is not, how can I say this, not ordered like yours and mine are, where it's, they'll have spatial misconceptions of spatial disorientation, I guess is the best way to say it.
And using a program of exercises and eye training, we can make that shift?
Well, usually it's done with lenses, prisms. We even use something called binasal occluders, which is, sounds interesting, but it refers to a partial occluder on the nasal part of their glasses. That can sometimes dampen down the hyperexcitability that and help them be more oriented in space. For the visual midline shift, we normally would use prism to get their center of balance to be more coordinated to their center so that they can work more comfortably with the occupational therapist and the physical therapist, so their weight bearing is more accurate for them.
That's excellent. So, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the program. It's time for us to, believe it or not, and we've got an hour past here. But again, thank you so much for sharing your information with us. I'd like to let our listeners know that next week we're going to talk about sound and music therapy, which we haven't talked about before. And we're going to have two guests, Kendra Fay and Janice Arch, to help us learn more about that. So thank you all for listening. Be well, be healthy, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you again for joining us for The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.